Or smart speaker.
Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and Children at Risk Chief Operating Officer Dr. Katie McConnell. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy? Katie.
Bob and Katie. Hey, thanks, Letty, very much. Hey, Letty, what's going on? No theme music? Is that the deal? Is that...
I'm happy to sing it.
No theme music? We don't have any theme music today? Is that, we're the kids in America.
Whoa.
There, Katie! Yeah, very good, right? So, hey, we have a great show today. Katie, you're in here for Mandy.
I am. She started her winter break a little bit early. We're happy to give her the time off. So, yeah, I get to fill in.
But as I understand it, she's going to be here for our holiday spectacular.
Absolutely.
Next week.
Yes.
On Christmas Eve.
It's actually one of her favorite shows.
Yes. So we're doing that, and then she'll be here for the prediction show the week after that.
That's
that we
right.
do at the beginning of the year. But until then, we have Dr. Katie McConnell.
It's filling in.
Filling in, doing her job.
That's right. Feeling the holiday spirit.
Dr. Katie, how was your weekend, by the way?
It was really good.
Yeah.
Actually, it accidentally got really busy. It's just... that time of year where...
Yeah. Have you been to a lot of holiday parties?
I have. I'm sorry to report that I have.
Hey, I was at a holiday party last night, and I would say around 9 o'clock, and there were kids there in pajamas. Like, people had come to the party, and they brought their kids in pajamas. And the kids were running around. It was actually pretty cute.
That is really cute, except I'm like, oh, 9 o'clock on a Sunday night? That's
so
late.
Yeah, lots of drinking going on and stuff, too. But I think it was a pretty tame crowd.
Relatively tame.
That's sort of an interesting thing, though, bringing your kids to the holiday party.
I feel like this could be a future thumbs up, thumbs down.
No, I think it could be. Would you do a thumbs up, down, thumbs up, or thumbs down to something like that? Kids to the holiday party. I guess it depends on the party, right?
Yeah, it depends on the crowd. Because I've been to some parties where I definitely think it would be A-okay, and everybody there had kids. There are others that I think it would be a pretty inappropriate situation.
The other thing is, if I'm a parent, I'm not sure. I want to have fun, and if I bring my kids, now I'm busy making sure that the kids don't embarrass themselves and so forth.
Or break something. That was always my trademark move, is to break something at someone else's house.
Right.
But also, parents have to make decisions, too. They have to, if they don't bring their kids, do they get a babysitter, or do they not go so they can spend more time with their kids? Wow, we had an accidental thumbs up, thumbs down right there.
Right there. Yeah, we loved it.
Lots going on.
So we have a good show today. We have a number of good things. First of all, our data head today. Lisa Cordova León, she's one of our staff members. She's at the Center for Social Measurement Evaluation and the Center for Parenting. And the number today, 31.
31.
Is that your age?
It is. Surprise, City of Houston, I've been meaning to tell you.
31 years old.
Yeah, and I didn't get any leads on this one either, so I'm real curious to see
what
she's going to come
either.
Up with. Then after Datahead, we have our good buddy Jorge Cruz calling in from Doctors for Change, and he's going to be talking about some of the good work that organization is going, that they're working on right now.
Healthcare in our community. I'm always looking
it's
forward
very
to
very important.
I love the Doctors for Change. And that's an organization, our own... Dr. Bikini is a part
That's right.
Of that
One of our other favorite co-hosts, Dr. Bikini.
Then we're also going to be talking with Tim Schauer. He's a senior VP over at Cornerstone Government Affairs. He is going to be very involved, Katie, in the upcoming legislative session. So we're going to get to talk to him. I'm feeling hopeful.
I'm glad. You know, I'm excited too. With people like Tim fighting the good fight for kids, kids in Texas definitely stand a chance. Mm-hmm. So I'll be eager to get some of his predictions, because I haven't talked to him in light of this new session coming up. So
we'll see how that goes.
And then we have our following Tim on our social conscience scale, where we want everyone to call in and share your opinion on thumbs up, thumbs down. And today we're going to be talking about the hot topic of publicly shaming your kids for bullying.
That was that young girl, right? Who, she was bullying on the bus. The bus driver kicked her off.
That's right. It was her second offense, bullying on the bus.
So her dad made her walk 5 miles in the snow uphill. Is
uphill
that what happened?
In Ohio,
In Ohio. It was cold weather, though, right?
It was cold weather, and it was 5 miles.
Yeah.
And while she was walking, the dad followed in the car.
And videotaped
And
her.
Recorded it, and was offering commentary the whole time and saying, I know a lot of people are probably going to judge me for this, but...
Did you watch that video?
I did. I've seen
you
it.
You did? Yeah. I didn't watch it. I've just heard all the hullabaloo about it.
There has been quite a bit of hullabaloo. So we'll be asking, should parents...
bully their children?
Well...
Or make...
I don't know if that's the route exactly that we're taking.
Should parents, we're doing thumbs up, thumbs down on this thing, right? Whether this, is this the right thing, the 5 mile walk.
Teach this child a lesson.
5 mile walk, mm-hmm. right?
Right. So I'll be curious
There's
to
a lot of little things about this, though, right?
There
the,
are. So
the
many
videotaping, the shaming, the walking.
There's
a, 5 miles in the cold.
The dad even says, you know, some people may think I'm bullying. Do you treat bullying with bullying?
Mm-hmm.
So we're hopefully going to have one of our resident experts call in, Gretchen Hemsel, who's a parenting expert here
expert.
In Houston.
Yeah, she's a parenting expert.
To get her insights.
In the studio with us today, AmeriCorps Vista's Genesis Herrera is here. Rebecca Harms are here. They're here at the microphone. We're going to have them participate in everything today. Rebecca, how are you doing today? You doing okay?
I'm good, Dr. Bob.
Very good. Jen, Genesis?
I'm great, Dr. Beam.
Yeah, all right. See, they're all ready. And they bring an interesting perspective as well. So Genesis, you're from like East LA, is that right?
No, I'm from...
Where are you from?
From Watts.
From Watts. So you grew up in Watts?
Yes.
Yeah. And then Rebecca, you grew up in like the East Coast version of Watts, Buffalo, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't think that's the East Coast version of it. What is the nickname for Buffalo? Is it the Wild Wing City? What did they call it? That was a joke. Come on. What is the Buffalo, New York, the what city?
They call it the City of Good Neighbors.
Oh,
how
isn't
pleasant.
That nice?
That's wow. So charming.
And is everyone super friendly there in Buffalo?
Yeah.
I mean, when they're not super cold?
Yeah. I would say that.
Yeah. And are you going home for the holidays, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, Rebecca. Yeah. And it's going to be cold, though, right?
Yeah, it's been in the 30s.
Wow. How much snow are you anticipating?
Hopefully no more than a foot.
No more than a
wow.
foot.
And that's... Genesis and Watts, will you have snow?
Never.
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 Never had snow there.
Sounds like we've got a great show.
I think it's going to be a show. I will continue to digress throughout the whole show. Do we have a little bit of theme music for Data Head this time? Whoa, yeah. Ha. So when I think about poetry in motion, I think about Lisa Cordova León.
She's the epitome of that. Lisa.
Yeah. Lisa, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you, Dr. Bell. How are you?
Very, very good.
Very good. Welcome to your inaugural Data Head this, on the line. We're happy to have you.
Is this the first time you've ever been on radio, Lisa?
Thank you, Mandy. Yes, it is my first time, Dr. Bob.
Oh, very good. And Dr. Katie and I were super excited to have you on the program today. So to talk, and what's your number today, Lisa?
My number today is 31.
31.
31.
And
yes.
That is not Dr. Katie's age, is it? Or is it?
Is it? I'm not sure. But
close.
Could be.
Close.
Could be. 31. It's my age. I don't know if it's Dr. Katie's age, right. But it's my age. All right. What does that mean for us, Lisa?
31 represents 31% of children's books written by and or about people of color.
31% of all the children's books written in 2018 were about or written by people of color?
Of 2017, yes.
2017.
And that's the most recent data that we have, yes.
So that seems to be sort of a positive number, is it, Lisa?
It is. However, only 7% of those books were written by Black, Latino, and or Native authors combined.
Interesting. That when you first see the number, I think Dr. Bob's right. It seems like, wow, that's really a lot. And then you look at the number of the only 7% were the authors, and you would hope that number would be higher as well.
Lisa, how do those books do? Did they sell pretty well?
It seems like they do. They're really varied in terms of topics.
Yeah, such as?
Such as stories about, there was one particular book that was written by a parent who didn't see his kid being represented in children's books, who was about a child of color who wanted to become a scientist. So it's about a kid who wants to be a scientist and befriends a robot.
Wow.
That makes good sense. We want to be showing kids examples of what they can be, right? We can tell them until we're blue in the face, but something like seeing them in a book makes it real for kids.
Lisa, let me ask you, growing up, I've had this conversation many times with people, right, is that we always look for ourselves in our books, in our movies. Growing up, I mean, were there enough children's books with Latinas in them for you as a kid? Were your parents able to buy those books?
I actually Dr. Bob, don't be cool ever reading a book about a Latino kid per se.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so my favorite books growing up were the Harry Potter books, and there's not Latino kids.
Maybe they were Genesis' favorite, too.
Genesis, you're here in the studio. I mean, did you find the same thing? It was just you weren't able to find many books about Latinas?
No, so when I find them, I buy them for my daughter.
Yeah, yeah, because that's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So when you look at these books, Lisa, that are being published, that 31% of them are about African-American, Latino, or Native American kids, that's a move in the right direction, but we really need to see more authors, I guess, is what we're really seeing, right?
Yes, that's true. And one of the questions that we need to follow up on is, why are we still giving preference to white authors telling diverse stories more than authors of color or Native authors?
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. Thank you so much for calling in, Lisa. This is a great number, an interesting conversation. I don't think a number that I've heard before. So
yeah, yeah, very good.
Happy to share that knowledge.
So, Lisa, we look forward to your upcoming children's book.
No pressure.
Will do. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks
Alrighty,
so much,
take
Lisa.
Care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. And, you know, I think that is interesting, right? That something that a lot of families don't really think about.
That's absolutely
right. But when you're a family of color, it's a significant deal.
I was going to say, when you're a family of the privileged majority, mm-hmm. you certainly don't think about those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But when we think about, when we see the gaps in our public education system now, we see the achievement gaps, we see the opportunity gaps. I think this is just one of many pieces that we can use to help fill that gap.
I remember in the 90s, and I was talking to a group of students from Rice. I worked at Rice University. And one of the Asian students talked about how they all liked Snow White because she wasn't a blonde princess or Disney character. She was dark-haired, even though she wasn't Asian, right? But at that point, you know, Mulan came out later. Pocahontas came out a little bit later.
In the 90s, though, yeah. there wasn't. That's
yeah, yeah.
really fascinating.
So it's sort of an interesting deal.
Well, and I think about some of the books that I shared with my kids when I was still working, when I was still teaching in the classroom. And I learned so much from some of the different books from kids about kids from different cultures, mm-hmm. right? It may have been a second grade level reading book, but I was still enjoying it. And, you know, it heightened my cultural awareness through that.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
really interesting.
Very good. Okay, you ready to move on to talk to
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold
outside, I've got the month of May. We always have the month of May.
We with Jorge on the line.
We have Jorge.
Do.
We have the month of May with Jorge. So, Jorge, how you doing, man?
Hey. I'm doing really good. How are you?
Very good. Jorge Cruz is with Doctors for Change, and we want to talk a little bit about healthcare in our community. Jorge, explain for people, thanks for being on the program, by the way, man, but explain,
Absolutely.
You know, in 15 seconds, what does Doctors for Change do, Jorge?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me, by the way.
Yeah.
So Doctors for Change is a nonprofit and nonpartisan organization that's made up of hundreds of physicians, nurses, social workers, and community members in the Houston area. So really what we're committed to is improving the healthcare in Texas by doing several of activities and really just kind of engaging mm-hmm. the community.
Wow.
Really quick, what we do is we kind of work in the community to improve care by decreasing obesity, fighting human trafficking, increasing resources for mental and behavioral health. We also educate the community on health-related issues through educational forums. And also, we also do advocacy as well to kind of promote health for all Houstonians. But that's just kind of a summary of kind of what we do.
When you think of all those issues of healthcare in our community, I wonder if access, you know, insurance isn't maybe one of the bigger issues. Is that something you guys work on a lot?
Absolutely. Access to care is one of the important ones. We work on a lot of issues, and access to care is one of them, so you're correct. And with access to care, we know that in healthcare, you know, there's a lot of barriers, especially with underserved communities, where it sometimes takes a little bit more effort for some communities to either get access or to get health insurance. And we really want to help improve that as well, just kind of provide resources to help support those who do need that support.
That's right. And, you know, we think about the current political climate and some of the things that are going on right now around the Affordable Care Act and how that could potentially have a really significant impact on many of our families, many of our children, you know, making
Absolutely.
Sure that they continue to have access to care is going to be very important.
What's the discussion right now, Jorge, when we talk about this recent judicial decision around access to care? As you talk to some of your colleagues in Doctors for Change and some of the physicians, what's the reaction to this judge, this Texas judge's decision to basically say Obamacare is invalid?
I think I would prefer to have our executive director, Sarah Ward, to comment on this specific subject, because that could give us, you know, a brief summary of what I feel I kind of perceive based on those conversations. But I think she'll be the best person to answer that question for us.
All right.
That's reasonable. We can plan to have Sarah on sometime soon to see, as I think things will just continue to grow. Jorge, I know something that you guys also work really hard on is, I think it's always the big struggle of all nonprofits is getting the word out. And you guys have a lot of educational events for the community. Can you talk to us?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, can you talk to us a little bit about some of the events that you guys have had in 2018 and perhaps some things that you have coming up in 2019 as we're looking ahead?
Yes, absolutely. So the base of our organization is made up of different committees, and these different committees kind of commit to different categories in health. So one of the committees that I guess I'll talk about is the Anti-Human Trafficking Committee. They do a lot of work in just kind of doing events and kind of engaging healthcare providers as to how we can kind of help educate and kind of learn how we could identify these red flags as far as who may be a potential victim of human trafficking. So that committee does a lot of work engaging different health professionals and also other nonprofit organizations. For example, they recently had an event at Second Cup Cafe where they kind of join forces, because are y'all familiar with the Second Cup?
Absolutely. We've had them on here many times, yeah.
Oh, yeah, shout out to Second Cup Cafe. So they worked together to host this forum, and I brought in also a victim of human trafficking to kind of give their personal experience, which was very captivating. So that was one of the recent events, and one of the other recent events that we had was with a LGBTQ forum on how healthcare providers can help make their environment more welcoming, more supportive, how they can support the LGBT community as well.
Yeah. Hey, Jorge, this upcoming legislative session is going to be a big deal. From the physician's perspective at Doctors for Change, what are the one or two big issues that you guys have coming up in this legislative session?
I'm sorry, repeat that question again, please.
Yeah, so this upcoming legislative session, what's going to be one of the big deals for you guys?
Well, I don't have the answer to that question yet. I think in my 4 weeks here at Doctors for Change, I've been learning a lot, so I'm trying to make sure I kind of get as much information. So I do apologize if I can't answer some of the questions specifically.
That's okay, Jorge.
The advocacy.
Very good. Jorge Cruz is with Doctors for Change. Jorge, thank you so much for what you do, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. It's always tough to have someone on the show who doesn't know what to talk about.
Well, that's right. Well, like you said, he's been there a month, so they have so many things going on. I know they're one of the programs that they have is their HEAL committee, and that's where they work with the county libraries to teach healthy eating and provide healthcare resources. And it's just, it's a unique kind of combination of healthcare and the library. That doesn't seem like a very natural connection, but it's something that they've leveraged and they've really had success in outreach to people on. So they're really going to continue to do a lot of really good work this session.
Yeah.
I know last time we talked to Dr. Bikini, who I assume her role now is still,
she's like the head of advocacy, so she does a lot of that advocacy stuff. So
I know they've been working hard to build out their agenda for the session. So
thumbs up, thumbs down. So we're talking a little bit about bullying today. Thumbs up, thumbs down. If you want to give a call, 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. In the studio with us are Rebecca and Genesis. And we're going to try to give Gretchen a call, see if she can be a part of this. But tell us, set this up for us, Katie.
So here's the situation. A young lady had been suspended from the bus. She'd had two incidents of bullying on the bus. This was the second incident. where she had lost her bus riding privileges. So her dad, in an attempt at teaching her a lesson,
yeah,
made her walk 5 miles to school in the 30-something degree temperatures.
Yeah.
A little bit of drama about the uphill. That wasn't necessarily the case.
This was in Ohio?
In Ohio.
It's hard to be outdoors in Ohio.
Well, right, this time of year. Right. And so while, as the young lady was walking, dad was recording and kind of offering commentary through much of her walk. And he very intentionally posted it on social media. It's gone viral. All of these people are seeing it now. And some, there are obviously a lot of different opinions. Is this an appropriate way to discipline a child, to bully a child as a, to correct their bullying behavior?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I wanted to start by asking an expert.
Absolutely.
An expert in parenting from the Center for Social, from the Center for Parenting and Family Well-Being. Gretchen Himsel's here. Gretchen, how are you doing today?
I'm good, but being an expert in parenting is a moving target.
It absolutely, right? But, I mean, if I'm going to move that target around, it's going to be you. You're the target.
You're the target, Gretchen.
So, Gretchen, when you hear this story about this young girl who's made to walk these many miles, and from my perception, it almost sounds like her dad is using social media. He maybe thought he was teaching a lesson, but it almost came across as him bullying her in a little bit. But tell me your perspective on this.
You know, I'm thumbs up on this one. The it wasn't the first infraction. I'm sure that they talked about this earlier, the dad and the daughter.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he made it very clear that actions have repercussions. And I don't think his original intent was necessarily to make it go viral. I think he just felt very strongly about making a stand. I heard, saw quotes of his that the family does not tolerate bullying.
That's
and
right.
I think that's important to name it, label it, and say that this is not something, this is not a family value for our family. And so then that happened, and she had a nice leisurely country walk to think about that.
And the dad did say he, after the incident, he does believe that she has learned her lesson.
Oh, really?
She has articulated that there is...
Is really... she going to say anything else, or else, because she'd have to walk 5 miles again if she she said, "Well, I really haven't learned my lesson."
That was actually going to be my argument, right? And I mentioned it earlier. We used to have a judge here in Houston that more than once.
My good buddy, Judge Poe.
Judge Poe, and we're dating ourselves a little bit but
that's, I think I was a teenager when he was a judge.
Oh, and I was still in diapers. But when he was here, you know, he was notorious for some of his untraditional sentences, and he would have. People, you know, stand out with a sandwich board and with a sign that said, "I stole from the store," if they had been convicted of shoplifting, for example. And that was an example that was used to threaten me many times as a child.
We're going to put a little billboard on you and have you walk around, Katie McCall.
Never wanted to end up in his court. Not that it was a juvenile court I would do anything that bad, but that was something that stuck with me. And I think that's probably the situation with this little girl. She's learned her lesson at this point.
You think so? Gretchen, is this something you would do with your own girls?
You know, I have done similar things. So, for example, we have a rule that there needs to be an adult home for sleepovers.
Yeah.
And I will ask my daughters, is the so-and-so's parents going to be home? And I get all sorts of answers.
Yep.
But then I always say, do you want me to call them? And I think that's a little bit of the, not public shaming, but being, you know, public and open. And kids often do not want to be, don't want to have their discipline aired. You know, so that
they
is
don't.
One option. I know another family that they take away a cell phone and they still want to get in touch with the kids. So instead of having their iPhone, their punishment is to get the clamshell phone, like the flip phone many years ago, because that's a little bit of public shaming as well. So, everyone, all the kids' friends know that
flip phone.
He has the clam phone.
Well, that's public shaming, right, having that flip phone.
It is.
Except for some of the old people that we know who have them anyway and really like them.
And they work just fine. They do everything they need it to do.
Right,
that was a direct quote from someone I know.
Your dad?
My dad. God bless. But, you know, Gretchen, also thinking about developmentally, right, part of oftentimes what happens in adolescence, right, part of that maturity and part of the brain development is the challenging of authority, right? So it's not uncommon that something like this might happen, but then so that challenge kind of has to be put right back to show that even though I see what you're doing, standing up, you're still only 15 or 12 or whatever the age may
be. Exactly. So, Gretchen, what would you have done differently? So this is I'm letting you go outside of the parameters of our usual thumbs up, thumbs down, black and white. But what would you have done differently if you were this parent of this young girl who was caught bullying on the bus?
You know, I feel that parent did what he felt was right in that situation, and I support him. You know, the girl had several chances. Honestly, 36 degrees in Ohio is not that cold. It's pretty balmy. So it wasn't as Midwestern expert. Perhaps it sounds. 5 miles is a long walk. However, it is a privilege to, you know, both get a ride and ride the bus. And I think that is the point that he was making, which is our children have privileges and not necessarily rights, and that they have to earn those privileges in our society, and that there are consequences for action. So, you know, I'm still thumbs up on this, and I support it. And the father has taken responsibility and explained why he put it on social media, and then it kind of just had a life of its own, which is, you know, something that we're all learning as well.
Happens on social media. That's right.
Wow, very good. Hey, stay with us, Gretchen. We're going to start taking. We have Johnny calling in, and so I wanted to talk to Johnny. Johnny, how you doing, man?
You guys are on all six cylinders today, huh? Anyway, I don't mind taking a Ted Poe approach for adults like Del Issa or Sharon Angle or Peter King or who's another one who ran for vice president from Alaska? She could see the Russians.
Oh, yes, Sarah Palin.
People like that, yeah, I have no problem. But I have mixed feelings about doing that with children, especially older kids.
Yeah.
If you're going to take that approach, I think the younger would be preferable because you can make an impression quicker, and it's less traumatic, I think, for them. They're more resilient than teenagers.
So your thumb's down on this idea of having this young girl walk the 5 miles.
Yeah, I don't think that's really serving any good purpose. And then there's other liabilities you create for your kid. You know, things can happen. You know, I recommend a good movie I just saw on Pluto TV the other night.
What was that?
It was released just a few years ago, but directed by Reitman. It's called Men, Women, and Children. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
Men, Women, and Children.
Okay.
I recommend that. It's currently on the schedule right now.
Okay, very good.
Check it out.
Johnny, you know, oftentimes I agree with you, and I agree with you today, too. I'm a thumbs down on this one as well. Hey, thanks, Johnny, for calling in, man.
All right,
very good.
Thank you, Johnny.
So, thumbs down from me, thumbs up from Gretchen, thumbs up from Katie, right?
That's right.
You like this idea, right?
Well, let's be clear. I don't know that I like this idea when you frame it like that. I could support this idea in this situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's always the right answer. And I think, too, a lot depends on the kid.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's something that we could treat every kid in this way because... To Johnny's point, it could have a really traumatic impact on some kids, and it may be less impactful on this young lady, for example. She learns her lesson.
First of all, I love how Johnny said we're operating on all six cylinders.
I know.
He's sharp, right?
Johnny always
is
a good caller.
Genesis, Rebecca, on this issue, thumbs up, thumbs down around this girl. What do you think? Genesis, what are you thinking on this one? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I think thumbs up.
You like the idea. You would be perfectly happy a couple of years ago when you were a youngster.
I had to walk every day and in the rain, and my parents had no remorse. I was very thankful when I got a ride, and I understood that it was a privilege. And, like, every kid is different, like Dr. Kitty said, and not the same methods will work. Like, I do different things with my son and my daughter because the same thing won't work for my son. Like, it'll go, like, the wrong way if I do the same thing for my daughter.
Mm-hmm. So it's not for everyone. Rebecca, what are you thinking on this one?
I keep going back and forth.
That's not allowed in thumbs up, thumbs down.
I want to be thumbs up, but the issue I have is the public shaming aspect of it being posted on social media. I just don't think that was necessary or the right decision to do, which would make me thumbs down.
Yeah. You're with me on that one, that's for sure. Gretchen, a final word. We have one other. Hold on, Gretchen. We're going to take one other phone caller. Let's see here. Jesse, you're on the line. How you doing?
Fine, yourself?
Very good. Well, Jesse, thumbs up or thumbs down on this young girl forced to walk 5 miles and then putting on social media?
Thumbs up, because, for one, if we didn't have social media and this white lynching, it would have been on in the newspaper if it was something to talk about. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point.
We have mugshots. You know, we've been doing that since the 70s and 80s and less newspapers. So it really doesn't matter how it was done, even if it was verbalized, because even since, you know, back to the public shaming, whether it's political or, you know, a city, municipal or whatever, we all have done it, and this is normal. But back to our children, we have to get them to not love you. Is this how the world would think of you?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit there, Jesse. Are you getting Jesse's? You're breaking up a little bit. Are you getting the gist of what Jesse's saying, Katie?
Yeah, it sounds like she's saying something similar to what Gretchen was saying. Yeah. Like, that for every action, there's a reaction, right? And if we make choices.
Balance. Just a healthy balance.
A healthy balance of compassion.
Hey,
I like
Jesse.
Jesse said
Jesse,
that.
Thanks for calling in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Gretchen, you with that, a healthy balance of compassion?
Absolutely. And hopefully, you know, that's learning about compassion and giving time to think about it. And what we haven't talked about yet is why the girl was bullying, you know,
is a
situation where she feels threatened and then she's lashing out or she doesn't know how to communicate. Is she insecure about her friendship group? I think that is something that the dad and daughter should try and talk about as well, because if it's happened once, hopefully it's not an instinct where it will happen again.
Yeah, that's someone brought that up at the staff meeting today. This how do we get at the root of all this? It's so oftentimes we react to things. But what is causing her to be a bully? You know?
And we're jumping to the assumption that dad doesn't know why, right? But he might actually know why and therefore made the decision that this is absolutely the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, that's or he has been completely inappropriate.
Or he's been completely inappropriate. Yeah.
Thumbs up or thumbs down. One of the could be,
he's either been appropriate or inappropriate. We're not sure.
But it's black or white on thumbs up, thumbs down. There's no in between.
Right.
There's
no.
Very good. Hey, Gretchen, thank you so much for what you do. And thanks for being our parenting expert today. I know that your kids look at you and think every day, Mom knows everything.
She's
and
perfect.
That's what we think at Children at Risk, and we think of Gretchen Hemsel as well.
I'm glad that we now have that on recording that I can share at home. That's
right. Yeah, because just us saying it should make it okay with the girls, don't you think?
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Gretchen. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So that's our Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down segment. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. We keep on waiting. Tim Shower knows how to groove. He picks only the grooviest of music, right?
And he's changing the world.
He's changing the world. One health issue at a time.
Absolutely.
Tim Shower is with us. Tim Shower is the senior VP over at Cornerstone Government Affairs. He's a lobbyist for good in Austin, and we work with Tim quite a bit. Tim, how you doing today, man?
Good. Hi, Bob and Mandy. How are y'all doing?
Well, it's Bob and Dr. Katie today, so it's...
Oh, Dr. Katie, I'm sorry. My bad. I was thinking we were talking to Mandy.
That
today.
Is A-okay.
But I understand you're going to be on our prediction show in 2 weeks, though, right? And Bob and Mandy will be doing that one, and you're going to be making some predictions, aren't you, Tim?
I am. I'm looking forward to it. That ought to be a good show.
Yeah, that will be a great show, Tim. Tim, as we look at this legislative session, right, as we're all getting ready for it, I am seeing amongst child advocates and those who are in the know, people are feeling a little optimistic, right, because of the big changes that happened in the makeup of the state legislature. We see a little bit of moderation on the part of some of the Republicans and maybe a general pro-child feeling. Am I being too optimistic, Tim?
No, I think your optimism is well-rooted. You're right. Some things have happened. The biggest impact on any legislative session is when the budget revenue estimate comes in. And you know, over the last 10 years, how many times have you and I talked and we're staring down, you know, a $4 billion deficit or a $12 billion, you know, some ridiculous deficit. And for a change, and in a way, you got to thank the energy industry for this, of course.
Right.
But the economy in Texas has been going quite well, and we're not facing a big deficit. So when you're not facing a big deficit, you have an opportunity to actually have really good conversations about what are we doing with the money, not so much of, oh, my gosh, we have to make sure that they don't cut $2 billion from – you know, from children's health or
right.
another billion from education or something like they did back in 2011. So in a sense, because of the financial condition, that should give everybody a little bit of optimism. But the election, definitely, I think the message, particularly on some of those distracting issues, was that the electorate doesn't want to hear about distracting issues. They want to know about what's the government doing to educate our children, make sure everyone is healthy and And you know, there's some bigger issues at play. So those are good. Those are good energy.
Yeah, it's like
kind of things moving forward.
It's let's see some business. Let's see some good. Let's take care of our families. Let's take care of our children. And I think in the end, that's part of what government is supposed to do, right? Take care of those that need help. And how do we invest in our economy? The best way to do it is through children.
Tim, what would you say are you most excited about going into session? We're 3 weeks out at this point in time. What's really got you ready to go?
If you'd asked me this question on Thursday, I would have had this long list of things that I was excited about. And now I quite frankly, I think the lawsuit that related to
Obamacare,
Affordable Care Act, and Obamacare on Friday that was determined is really going to be such a huge distraction for the legislature that there's going to be some things going on in particularly the health realm where we're going to try to create some backstops. So if indeed this case does move forward, which most of my legal friends have said it's not going to move forward, the appellate court will overrule it, but so prior to Thursday, I was even more optimistic. But I think just to jump to the big issue in the room, is all the leadership that I've talked to in both the Senate and the House really want to figure out how to reform school finance, how to make sense out of what we're doing with this idea of recapture. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to people in Houston where you've got such a high-need school district that we're sending $200 million per year to the state. That just doesn't make sense. So there needs to be some school finance reform. They need to figure out what that means. But most importantly, they need to get more money into the classrooms where it's needed. You know, I have to agree. Some of the people, I've heard stories about school districts building water parks and school districts being kind of some frivolous things. But the big question is, do the school districts that need to educate our future, you know, the children who are going to be our future workforce, going to be our future artists and our future musicians and everything else, are they ready? Are they going to be in a position to do it? And that supposedly, at least as of today, is going to be the major focus of our new speaker. I know that we've had some interim work done between joint House and Senate committees, and our governor's come out and said he really wants to work on this too. So there's some big momentum on school finance.
I like some of the issues that we've been talking about in regards to public education and school finance, this idea that we're going to figure out a way to do full-day pre-K, right? We know that this is a very powerful tool in ending poverty, as full-day pre-K can do a lot. Longer school years for children in poverty as well, so that kids who need more time on task have access to time on task. Teachers will make more money if they stay in a instead of a 178-day school year, they get a 210-day school year. These are things that sort of are win-wins for everyone. And what I like is that these aren't just pie-in-the-sky options right now. These are things that Republicans and Democrats alike are talking about. It seems a little exciting. And I know this is the time when everyone's optimistic, but these seem like very real things, Tim.
Yeah, and I think we could get some wins on those things. The full-day pre-K momentum has been building for years. Anybody that studies education realizes that the old ag model of taking 3.5 months off in the summertime is not good for education. You know, maybe it was good for having the young people help bring crops in, but I'm pretty sure we don't need to do that anymore.
That's not a requirement for most communities, even in Texas.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, on health, I wanted to ask you a question, and then I know Katie has a couple more questions. But I wanted to ask you, because of the defeat of some of these legislators, some of them who are anti-vaxxers, right? You know, I wonder if the anti-vaccine lobby, which is a small but very vocal minority, will they have less play during this next legislative session because of the defeat of some of these legislators?
Boy, I sure hope so, Bob. And you know me, I'm a super huge advocate for vaccinating our children. You know, it was one of the very first bills I worked on in 1993, my first session when I was here, when we did the Shots Across Texas program. And we found out there were so many young kids before they got into school that weren't vaccinated. And it never crossed my mind back then that there would be an organized opposition that would challenge all the science that we've had for over 200 years
yeah.
on the effectiveness of vaccines to come in. But they are a well-organized group. They're passionate. They are horribly wrong. They've
yeah.
got really bad science backing them up, and yet because they are passionate, they've been able to win over a few folks. But the good news is we've got the physician community is re-engaged
right.
on this.
Right.
I'm really excited about that. Part of the reason that I think the anti-vaxxers made so much progress in the last 10 years is that those of us that understand science and advocate for good science in the public arena, we just assumed that it was such a frivolous argument that they would never make progress. So we kept working as if they didn't exist. And I think the last couple of sessions, we've realized we have to acknowledge that they exist. We have to fight. We have to get in there and explain why these things are important and,
right.
and really use good science to show what's there. But, yeah, I'm optimistic that we – let me put it this way. I don't think we're going to lose any more ground this session. I don't know if we've got the votes to make up some of
right.
the ground that we need to make up. But at least if we can stop losing – you know, the old rule of a hole is if you're in a hole, stop digging, right? And if we can stop digging, then we will have made a little bit of progress, and let's keep fighting and keep educating and talking about the importance of vaccinating your children early on.
Absolutely.
And making sure that when they start interacting with other kids, that they've got their full panel of vaccines.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to believe, Tim, that you're saying you had this, you know, started having this conversation in 1993, and now 25 years later.
Yeah, I don't think I was born back then, but Tim was working it.
I was just about to go into kindergarten.
Yeah.
No, really, I was just about to go. But to think that now we're still having this conversation, and just having worked in the legislature the last three sessions, you know, that this conversation still dominates is really, it's just startling every time.
Yeah. You have a final question for Tim today, Katie?
I do, Tim. So I kind of already asked what you were most looking forward to, and I don't want to tread on the prediction show too much, but if we were 6 months down the road and having a recap show of the session, what would you say would be the best victory that we can imagine at this point in time?
That's a good question, Katie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think?
Great question.
Yeah.
I'll put it this way,
that we have passed a school finance bill that puts more money in the classrooms and advances the cause of all-day pre-K. That would be a huge victory. Full-day pre-K.
Yeah.
If we can get that, because my biggest concern about what they're doing with the school financing is that in the moving around of, oh, we need to give property tax relief, we need to do this or that, that the schools are going to get to the end of session and look around and go, wait a minute, this wasn't supposed to be a cut session, and when they redid the formulas, we're going to find out that we got cut. That's my biggest concern, but my biggest victory, and I have talked to lots of people who believe that we're looking at a very positive session for children, that I think our biggest victory is that we win those big things on education.
Very good. Tim Schauer is the Senior VP over at Cornerstone Government Affairs. Tim, I know we'll see you in Austin, and I know we'll see you back on the radio show. We need to get you back in as the legislative session develops. A lot of good things in store, but we'll also a lot of defense in store as well. So it's always interesting in Texas. So,
yeah.
Thanks, Tim. We'll
Looking
talk to you soon.
Looking forward to it. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah,
thanks,
happy
Tim.
Holidays
Same
to you.
You.
Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. You ready to talk a little bit of Hurricane Harvey?
Absolutely.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be bright.
I feel like we've really nailed the intro songs today.
Yeah, I think they're really good. Do you know who sings this one? Stephen Bishop.
Oh, I was like, yeah,
is that what was on there?
No,
I don't know.
I don't.
Stephen, I always liked that song, right? But I noticed that whenever there's like a documentary on hurricanes or something, this is always comes at
the
end.
Go-to right? song.
Yeah. At the end. So in the studio with us, Genesis Herrera, Rebecca Harms, spending the year down here in hurricane recovery, and two AmeriCorps Vistas, spending a lot of time. Rebecca, one of the things that we're very worried about is, and we have been since right after the hurricane, is getting our schools back up to speed, right?
Yes.
And there are still a number of schools that haven't reopened. I mean, the kids are back in school, and that's been happening. But in terms of the buildings that they're used to going to, we're really getting some of those back going, right?
Yeah, so there's four elementary schools that were closed, and it was past that. They're being completely destroyed and rebuilt. And
are actually, these in the Houston School District?
Yeah, they're in Houston School District. And I want to focus on Coulter, which recently began...
Coulter Elementary, that recently began
construction of the new building, and this time they're raising it 5 feet.
So 5 feet higher. Mm-hmm.
So, Rebecca, for our listeners, can you help us or help them, help me, even understand why? So we're more than a year after the storm. We've just started construction. Have you guys found out a little bit about the process there and why it has taken this long to start on the construction?
Yeah, so I know that the funding had to be approved to rebuild the four schools. It's going to be $126 million. And just the approval process, and we're seeing it in housing as well. It takes time to get everything approved and for construction to begin. And
seems longer than it should, but it's just there's lots of bureaucracy that this takes time. But the commitment there, Braeburn, Scarborough, Coulter, Mitchell, these will all be rebuilt.
Yes, and hopefully they'll be completed by 2020. That's at the earliest, so it could be longer than that.
And are they building all of these schools higher, Rebecca?
I'm not sure about the other three. I know that Coulter Elementary is in a flood-prone area, and it was just by luck that it took till Harvey that it flooded, so they're taking precaution and building it higher. I'm not sure about the other three.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Well, that's good that they're taking those steps, especially if it's in an area that I would imagine has likely been hit before. If it's flood prone, the school has had to spend money to recover previously.
Yeah. Genesis, one of the things that you and I have talked about has been this idea that for a lot of non-citizens, people living in Houston, this has been sort of a double tragedy, right? Because they haven't stepped forward. They're scared in this environment, in this political environment, to step forward and ask for help. But it seems like some of the stuff just keeps getting worse and worse for some of people living in our city that are non-documented.
A lot of the because of the rising fear and the eligibility requirements, it's kind of hard for them to get services. For the city of Houston and for the Harris County, for all of their programs that they're getting HUD funding for, you have to be a U.S. citizen or a resident.
So is that a law that you to get? I mean, if I have a home that I bought, do I need to be a U.S. citizen to get help?
So according to HUD requirements, you actually don't. And the General Land Office
That's the Texas General Land Office.
Was just disseminating that information that they're not adding any additional requirements, just the basic ones, and you don't need to be a U.S. citizen or a resident. You just need to have a valid photo ID.
Wow. But the city and the county have imposed their own rules on this. In Houston and Harris County.
And when they were asked why the additional requirement, they said they needed to look into where to find the answer and get
back. Is that something you and your colleagues are pursuing a little bit more?
Yeah. So the Texas General Land Office was on a Harvey Recovery Leadership Group call that meets every biweekly on Fridays. And so the city of Houston is also on there. And so they said that they would get that information to all of the members of that group to get to the bottom of this, because it's a big miscommunication.
Well, and it is a big concern, right? We know local control is very important in many communities around our state, right? So we can see, we appreciate that flexibility from the federal government. The flip side of that is we certainly don't want people to not have access to these very essential services that are provided through the housing department that they could potentially have access to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, even right after the storm, right, we saw a lot of homes where people that may have just had an uncle who was undocumented, even though they were, or all the kids were citizens, but they still were not asking for help because they were scared, right? They don't want any member of the family to be deported or have the threat of deportation. But I think in this case, when we're talking about homes being rebuilt and we're making unreasonable demands on people that have bought their home and
right.
that that own the land, you know, it just seems odd that we would make unreasonable requests of them.
Yeah. So the Texas General Land Office basically said that, like, if it's under your name, you have the deed and you can have a valid ID, that you're eligible.
Mm-hmm. But the county and the city are saying otherwise.
Yeah.
To date.
Yes, yeah, just to clarify that. And that's, you know, that is something that as time goes on after the storm, we are seeing a lot of many reports of kind of re-traumatization for individuals. You know, potentially somebody has been fighting this battle for, what, 13, 14 months, you know, trying to get their home back up, trying to recover what was lost. And then to continue to be met with this type of red tape is really hard
yeah.
for people that have already fell victim to this storm.
Yeah. yeah. What other, Rebecca and Genesis, when we talk about sort of the longer term impact on children, what are we talking about here?
So there's been a lot of mental health trauma that kids have had to go through, and a lot of our work we look through the lens of what is the impact on children, and mm-hmm. a lot of it just stems back to mental health and the long-term effects that they're going to deal with. And we want to look at how do we mitigate that impact for the next storm.
Yeah Wow. A lot of work to be done.
I was going to say, and that on the Texas Gulf Coast, we know it's inevitable, right? So what can we do? And the work that you guys are doing in particular with the collaborative, right? Continuing to bring all of those stakeholders together, all of those people that have a hand in the lives of children to continue the conversation is going to help so much when we do find ourselves in that situation in the future.
As you guys talk to the experts, right? I was at a thing last night where someone said, well, the chances of us getting 52 inches of rain again are remote. You know, we're not going to have this sort of flood. What do you, as you talk to the experts, do people think we're going to have another hurricane or and a flood like this?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say every time we've gone to a meeting, they've always like, we have to be ready for the next one.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, part of it is the reaction, right? We just had one, we're going to have another one. But I think this is a lot of experts are saying this.
That's
is...
That's right.
I mean, some neighborhoods have had 3-4 floods in a row. So
yeah.
History would tell you it's probably going to happen again.
It's a great predictor. Wow.
My body went in motion right there. Oh, Letty knows how to turn it on and turn it off. Boop, boop, boop. Very fast.
That
right?
is right. She yeah. did. But now you know what that means.
That means not it's only the final four awake. At 54, right?
That's right. The final four.
Time to ask some really fun questions of Rebecca and Genesis, right?
That's right.
Let me ask you guys this too. What's you guys, you know, from Buffalo and from Los Angeles, what's your favorite thing about Houston? That's question number one today.
I love the food and just the different cultures and experiencing a completely different lifestyle.
You have a favorite food here in Houston or a restaurant or something, or what do you think?
I go to Poras in Denver Harbor, and they have the best carne guisada. I've never had it before.
Carne guisada.
Nice. It's delicious.
Queremos carne guisada. And what do you think, Genesis? What's the favorite, your favorite thing about Houston?
I haven't really thought about that. I guess my favorite thing is...
This is Radio Genesis. We like think on our feet here, so...
And Genesis loves to think on her feet.
Mm-hmm. I guess I like that I'm not living in the city.
You like living in the suburbs.
Yeah, I finally
that's your
got
favorite
to,
thing about
I
Houston.
I finally got to see what it's like.
And what is it? Everything that everyone thinks it is?
Yeah, I see where people move out.
Really? Really? Wow. I moved like right back into the city. I can't stand the suburbs, right?
Not
You also
for me.
Live in the city
yeah.
too, Dr. Yeah, Katie, right?
I do.
Yeah, yeah. Do you live in the suburbs, Rebecca?
Yes, currently. Yeah. In Buffalo, I lived in the city.
So which do you like better, than the city or the suburbs?
I like the city.
You do?
Being around things.
Yeah, very good. Okay, what's our next question, Katie? Get me out of this.
Our next question, and hopefully you guys have had some prep for this. Favorite joke? Go.
Why did the elephant cross the road?
I don't know. Why did the elephant...
because it was the chicken's day off.
Wow, look at that. Rebecca has a feature in comedy. Your favorite bad joke, Genesis? Oh, yeah, you're pretty sharp today, Genesis.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The interrupting cow.
The interrupting cow. Moo. Who?
Oh, there you see. She interrupted a cow that interrupted with a moo. That was good.
Very good. Okay. Number three question. Favorite TV show growing up? Rebecca.
SpongeBob.
SpongeBob SquarePants. Your favorite TV show, Genesis, growing up?
The Avatar.
Avatar. Is that a show? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, TV the show. Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a show. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
I don't know that, but I'll believe you that it was. So as our city of Houston continues to get to know you guys a little bit better, what's your favorite show now?
Oh. I love The Office.
Oh, the Office. Good.
Yeah. And your favorite TV show right now, Genesis?
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh, that's on Netflix
yeah,
right now. Yeah.
They just have a new season. Like,
by the way, I just saw a movie on Netflix this weekend, Roma. If you've not seen it, it's going to win Best Picture,
I can't
I'm sure.
wait.
It's fantastic.
Hearing about it, I'm absolutely excited to watch it this weekend.
It's absolutely going to win Best Picture. In our last minute or so for our final four, thank you guys very much, by the way, what's your favorite TV show right now, Katie?
Oh, gosh, I would have to say 90 Day Fiancé on TLC.
Really?
I wish everybody could see how Dr. Bob was looking at me right now.
I've never heard of that show. Well, you know, it doesn't sound good.
It's not great. It's not. It's about individuals that are going through the K-1. It's a reality show about individuals going through the K-1 visa process.
Wow. Sort of interesting, huh?
It is definitely interesting.
TLC.
Drama.
So it's only really good shows on TLC, as I understand
it's only really good shows I watch just in general, but yes, that's absolutely
I know you like the good shows. Hey, this is the last week here live that we have Laura as our producer. So, Laura Rodriguez, thank you so much for all that you've done. You have been fantastic. I'm going to miss Laura so much.
Yeah, you are going to miss Laura.
I am going to miss. Everyone knows I'm going to miss Laura. She's been fantastic. I know she'll pay. You know, maybe you could do like a cameo and talk about the legislature because she's leaving to work at the state legislative
level.
That's right. So. We're going to miss her a lot. Dr. Katie, thank you for filling in.
I would love to do a cameo, Dr. Bob.
Okay. Well, listen, Laura Rodriguez has been fantastic. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Katie, for being here for
Always
Mandy.
It's a pleasure.
Hey, until we see you guys next time, keep up the good work and hug your kids. We'll see you next time here on Pacifica Radio.